Hi everyone, good morning and welcome. This is Seek Sustainable Japan and we are live with Bridie Reed coming to us from Canada, I believe. How's the weather in Canada today, Bridie?
Hi JJ, it's lovely to be here. Yeah, the weather in Canada is it's changeable, I would say. I don't think it's as hot as in Japan. As you can see, I'm wearing a sweater. I would say it's probably about 23 degrees today.
Oh my gosh,
and a little bit cloudy.
Bliss. So
I'm sure you guys are just craving weather like that.
You can see my summer look, a little bit of sweat as we're talking.
You're glowing.
It's wonderful.
You're glowing, JJ.
Oh, thank you. But it's wonderful to connect with you. Thanks so much for joining. Now, for anybody who doesn't know, Bridie Reed is one of the co-founders of World Vegan Travel, doing amazing tours, fully catered, fully organized, complete package tours around Japan, around Japan and the world. And we're so excited that you're able to do it in Japan. To me, focused on sustainability, of course, vegan vegetarian options in travel is such a big part of developing better future travel. How did it all start? I know you have a background living around Asia and the world, but how did you get the idea we should actually start a vegan tour company? Where did that come from?
That's a good question. So way back in the early 2000s, I got a job with a tour company called Intrepid Travel. They're quite a big company. I mean, they were pretty big then. Now they're huge. And I got a job working for them as a tour leader. I worked for one contract in Southeast Asia, specifically in Thailand and Malaysia, and then another contract in France because I was a French speaker, and also then in Morocco. Both France and Morocco were new destinations for Intrepid, and it was in Morocco that I had a trainee on the first trip in Morocco. His name was Sebastian Seb, and he was on my trip. He was a trainee on the 3-week trip, and we realized that we quite liked each other and we got together. So that was 20 years ago. So about 9 months of being together, it can be quite hard on mentally and physically, because basically when you're tour leading for Intrepid and other companies like this, maybe it's changed now, I'm not sure, but basically you would be 1 week on, 1 month on, 1 week off, and when you're moving every 1 or 2 days, it's quite physically demanding. And and also, it was very hard. Seb and I had met, we had fallen in love, but we were hardly able to see each other at all. And I was also pretty burnt out by them. So we decided to move to Vietnam. It's not hugely relevant, so I won't go into that too much, but we moved to Vietnam. I did sort of do a little bit of tourism work there, but I then got into international school teaching, and Seb developed a business in TV production. Then in 2009, I became vegan, and we were quite happy just working on our businesses and everything. And I became friends with the person that inspired me to go vegan in the first place. Her name is Colleen Patrick-Goudreau. She's been doing a podcast since like 2006, and she was the one that inspired me to go vegan. And then, of course, she was such a great role model or inspiration to me. There we go. Well done. And we became really good friends, and she doesn't have kids and we don't have kids, and she liked travel and we liked travel, obviously, from our background in this, that we started doing a lot of trips together. And then Seb actually was the one that kind of initiated it. He said to Colleen, I think we could probably put a trip together for your followers. Now, this was back in like 2016. So this idea of influencer hosted trips was very, very unusual back then. Now it's very common. We see a lot of influencers saying travel with me, that's fine. But back then it was kind of a little bit unusual. And we went to we convinced her, or Seb convinced her, and said, I think we can make it really, really good. And she trusted us with her brand, because she was putting her brand on the line, even though we were really good friends and everything. So we decided to do a tour to Thailand. That was in 2017. And astonishingly, that trip sold out, and which was amazing. And then, of course, the actual trip itself went really, really well. And then we thought, well, we'll try another one. And here we are today. We're running about nine trips a year, which is pretty much at our capacity, I think, considering we run all of the trips with help and support from local partners or local guides. And we run, still to this day, we run trips hosted by Colleen Patrick Gaudreau. We host trips with some other groups as well, like the National Health Association, who specialize in whole food, plant-based, no salt, no oil, no sugar tours. And we run our own tours as well that aren't hosted by anyone. It's just us. So that was maybe more information that you wanted, but that's how we got started.
Yeah, no, that's perfect. And I've shown pictures as we're talking of Colleen and on the tours, and all the feedback, of course, is really fantastic for all the trips. A fabulous week. It's just been incredible. A wonderful trip. And I love the video that you did where you talk about the six reasons you might be interested in doing a World Vegan Travel Tour. Let's talk about them one by one. So traveling with like-minded people.
Look how young I look there. My goodness. And fabulous lighting. Yes.
You look amazing. You look wonderful.
Yes, this was something, I mean, I guess maybe it's a surprise, maybe it's not, I'm not sure. But, you know, when you travel with like-minded people, obviously it's much nicer than traveling with people with whom you don't have much in common. And I think, you know, most of the people who join a group tour, they want to make connections with people. And you know, of course, it's nice to make positive connections with people that you know, and that you feel like you don't have to try too hard about it. You just feel relaxed and at ease very easily, because you've got so much in common already. And you know, I don't know if every vegan feels like this, but very often vegans can feel like a bit of a minority. They feel like they're a little bit judged, or they feel that others are judging them, or they feel like they have to be on their best behavior and can't relax and be themselves.
And you don't have to do all the explanations, right?
Exactly.
We're all on the same page. You don't have to talk about why you chose to be vegan. You can just enjoy the travel. You don't have to do that every meal, right?
Absolutely. And you don't have to have like the big negotiations and education of the chef. And you know, most of us are vegans. We don't mind so much about that most of the time. Like, it's a great opportunity for advocacy, depending on how you feel about that. But it's nice to have a bit of a holiday from that, for sure. So I guess that's why that would be a nice reason to join a vegan group tour.
Yeah, absolutely. And that goes right really into the second one really well. You want the joys of traveling without the hassle. So it is possible, definitely, if you do it on your own, but you're going to have to do so much research to set up all these great places to have your meals, but also the experiences.
Absolutely.
State. So with people like you who have done all the research, who have been to all the places, and you can set it up, and then it's just smooth travel, right?
Absolutely. I mean, if you're doing a 2-week resort vacation in in an all-inclusive in Mexico, obviously you don't have to be on a group tour to do that. And some people get a real kick out of doing all of the research and the planning, and they absolutely love it. In which case, you know, save some money and do it yourself. You're definitely paying the tour operators to do some of that, to do that for you. But most people I find, and I always liken this to like feeling like you are a kid again. Because when you were a kid, most of the time stuff just happened. You just went along for the ride and you didn't have to do anything. You know, someone told you to come to dinner and someone told you to do this. And, you know, obviously we're not bossing people around treating people like children, but it is really nice to have a break from that. And, you know, travel, no matter what, is a lot of decisions. What time have I got to get up in order to make this departure time? And, oh, I've got to ask what time breakfast is, or am I going to be able to keep my luggage at the hotel because the train doesn't leave until 5 o'clock, or do I need to go and then figure out a left luggage place before I could get the train? It's mentally, it's a lot of work. It's quite tiring. So if you're able to, and you don't get a kick out of doing all of that, then it's a really great to have somebody do that for you, especially, you know, if you're busy with business or work or life. And then, you know, basically you can just turn up on the group meeting on day one, and you can just know, or hopefully feel confident, and that will be your experience, that you will have an absolutely wonderful time and just really low stress and no hassle.
Yeah. And that, I've had so many guests who come through, and a lot of them are doing all their planning, you know, and doing all the stress of planning, but enjoying it. Like you say, some people really like to choose their own things. There was a young girl in the family I guided the other day, and she did all her research on TikTok, which apparently is the way to do it. But it was also, even for her, she was surprised how some of the things she was really looking forward to were very disappointing, because you've got people on TikTok and maybe AI generated, and you can't really trust it completely. But for the tours like you're doing, you have been to all the places. Mm-hmm. You have talked to all the restaurant people. You have talked to all the hotel managers. They know what to expect, and so do your guests. So you have that faith of consistency for the tour, right?
I think so. Yeah, we're really looking at every experience through the lens of our travelers, our demographic of travelers, for sure. So that really is helpful. And, you know, I wouldn't say that, you know, all TikToks of travel related stuff are terrible, but are not fun. But I can imagine that, you know, you've got to be hyperbolic. This is amazing, because it gets the views. Or maybe it's just very Instagrammable or TikTokable, but it's actually not that exciting. They've just got great camera skills. I don't know. But usually travelers are very, very happy with the itineraries that we put together. And we really try hard to create the best value for each day, so that there's not a lot of dead time. We put in a little bit of free time here and there if we think people will need it. But the idea is that you know, it's going to be enough, hopefully not too much, but enough that most people are going to be like, oh my goodness, I cannot believe we did so much in this 9 days.
Yeah. And the feedback's been great. Like, people saying much better than I could have done, past the expectations. It's not only what's on the itinerary, but it sounds like you're adding hidden extras, little surprises along the way, which is quite fun, right?
Yes. We do try to surprise our travelers with a few little things each trip, and partly this comes down to just wanting our travelers to feel like a kid again, because I find so often when we're adults, surprises are bad. They're usually connected with something very negative, and isn't it nice to just somehow just like have a surprise and for it to be really, really lovely. So, for example, you know, it might be an opera singer that's singing to you over lunchtime in while you're having lunch at al fresco in Tuscany, for example. That's just one that springs to mind. Or a Maiko coming to perform and entertain our travelers in Kyoto when they didn't know that was on the itinerary. It would be a lot easier from a marketing perspective if we could put all of those things in the itinerary, because then people would know. But we really want to just create a few little surprises there so that people will experience that feeling of joy that you get when you have a really nice surprise and that you just can't believe it.
Absolutely. That's part of the joy of travel, right? Is those hidden, real, in real time, unexpected occurrences, but also as a planner, you can kind of set up these hidden gems, little pieces of magic. That they otherwise wouldn't experience, right?
Yes. If you're researching and planning everything yourself, then surprise, surprise, you can't really have any surprises. Unless, of course, you're organizing for other people and they get the surprise.
Yeah. That's a great way to do it. I love the idea of enjoying food while you're traveling. And of course, that's the basic difference that your tours are compared to a regular tour, where they would still have to negotiate meal by meal if they were vegan travelers, right?
Yes. So,
and that is often very hard work and hit and miss when you're trying to find it on your own, right?
Yeah, absolutely. We work really, really hard with our hotels or our restaurants, at non-vegan restaurants, to try to make sure that the food is delicious, colorful and tasty, balanced. You know, very often when you're vegan, you can end up just getting refined carbohydrates. So of course we don't want that. So we try to create delicious food, and especially when we're going to countries where the cuisine is a huge part of the culture. So for example, Italy, Thailand, Vietnam, Japan. I mean, French cuisine is not very vegan friendly, but it is very elevated, you know, skilled. So we try to make French versions of all of the things that you would expect made vegan, using like vegan meat products or vegan cheeses and etc.
That's so important. And I imagine in Japan as well, there's wagashi or Japanese sweets, which are normally vegan, but you still have to check, because there are kind of modern equivalents, which are adding dairy or even adding gluten instead of the agar, which is vegan, right? So even those traditional habits, which you used to be able to say, no, it's all vegan, it's kind of like, oh no, you got to check. So you need that local guide or the insider who's going to check all the information. In the New York Times article that you guys are quoted in, this was a great example of, this is a Japanese udon dish, vegan udon dish. But surprise, surprise, this is hard to find in Japan. This is udon or udon noodle bowl at Four Seasons Mexico, right? And this is something I often see when I travel. London is very vegan friendly, right? Germany, Berlin, so many places. And that's often where I can more easily eat vegan Japanese food. And, you know, it is changing, getting a little bit easier. But when we see these great recipes abroad, which are naturally vegan because there's the demand, hopefully we can see the potential for it in Japan too, right?
I agree. I just came back from a trip to the UK, and I was blown away in the UK with just how vegan friendly non-vegan restaurants were. And and everyone, like, as soon as you sat down, people were asking if you had any allergies or reactions, or if any special dietary restrictions. So they had marked vegan menus. The wait staff were very, very well-versed in all of that. So, you know, it really stopped a lot of that awkward conversation where you're trying to navigate the menu. And, you know, definitely I would say, like, that's been our experience in Japan and also South Korea. If you go to a non-vegan restaurants in either of those places, there don't seem to be a lot of vegan options on the menu at all. You really have to seek out vegetarian and vegan places to get anything exciting, sadly.
Yeah, right? And it is, of course, getting better because of your tours. You're creating the demand. You're changing that kind of like consumer activism, right? So as a consumer creating demand, you're changing what's on offer. The hosts are thinking about it more carefully. In our area, doing the vegan vegetarian consulting, but also the map. Now, when we talk to restaurants, they say, you know what? It makes it easier for our staff because then the customer doesn't have to negotiate. It's right there and they can just point to it. So the staff, the chefs have a much easier time once it's set up.
Absolutely. Yes, that's been our experience also. I mean, we just coming in there usually for like one or two meals to a place. So, you know, it's just like a one-off or maybe once a year or something. And what you're doing is amazing for this sort of consistency. But yeah, it is interesting because, you know, we sort of nudge/force the hotels and restaurants to try something new. I mean, we don't spring it on them. We let them know, look, you're going to be expected to produce 3 interesting vegan breakfasts over the course of our 3 days in Kyoto, for example. And, you know, it's going to be a bit of work. Are you happy to do this? Okay, we're in, let's do it. So, they actually have to make it. Very often we'll go ahead and taste ahead of time, or we'll send someone to do a tasting just to make sure that it's up to standard. Because, you know, sometimes people just don't know. they don't know how it should taste.
That's right. And sometimes when we do go through the long legwork of working with places, trying to get the soup stock, the dashi is always a big hurdle. But when you introduce Osawa Japan, one of those vegan soup stock companies, if you introduce those packets to the restaurant, for example, and then they try it for your group, and then they start thinking about the ingredients and like, oh, I could do this too, you know? So it's that kind of education and training and awareness, I think, is definitely an important part of what you're doing on your tours.
Well, thank you. I mean, it's definitely something. And, you know, I've had some amazing vegan food in Japan specifically. So it's doable. It's doable. It just takes some effort and time and some support from, you know, whether it's me encouraging them or whether it's you doing some consulting, JJ.
Yeah, we're all helping each other. I think all of our efforts, right? Another big reason for people to join your tours is the vegan-friendly activities. So you often take people to animal shelters, or you see the elephants, but not ride the elephants. Can you talk a little bit about that part?
Sure thing. So very often included on itineraries, on non-vegan trips, there could be an activity that wouldn't align with vegan values, whether it be elephant riding or going to visit a leather store in Morocco or the tanneries in Morocco. I've tried to think of some others, but there are a lot that can involve animals that most people wouldn't sort of bat an eyelid at doing. But of course, as vegans, we don't want to support that. We make sure that we include activities that would be aligned with vegan values. So very often it's included like going to a sanctuary, like the elephant sanctuary there, or there's a beautiful cat cafe for rescue cats in Vietnam. There's a farmed animal sanctuary that we go and visit in Tuscany. So we try to include them as much as possible. Unfortunately, we haven't been able to find one in Japan that's close to our
There is one in Hiroshima, so I'll introduce that to you.
Okay, that's interesting to know, because we looked and we couldn't find one, so I'd love to know. So when we can't do that, we for, for example, so far in Japan, we like to invite a few activists to dinner, a couple of one evening on our trip, so our travelers could get like a little bit of an insight into the vegan movement in Japan or wherever it is, so that they can kind of learn about what are the issues, what are the challenges, because very often we're very vegans are very curious about what is going on. A lot of us do some sort of activism. It could be just a little bit or it could be a lot. So it's just really nice to be able to bring those parts, bring that community of Japan in this case to our travelers and get to know each other. And interesting, like it could be very surprising. For example, we had, that's right, we were in Rwanda. We were in Rwanda and we were visiting Akagera National Park, and Akagera National Park has a lot of rhinos and some other animals there. And of course, we know that rhinos are very susceptible to being killed for their horn. And as a result, you know, there has to be a very big surveillance like operation. And, you know, many vegans would not love this, but it was just a fact of what it was. They had a lot of dogs there as part of the surveillance team. They had helicopters, but they also had teams of handlers with dogs that would take people around. And one of our travelers, she saw a need. She didn't really love the beds that these dogs were on. She happened to know a lot about dogs, so she fundraised and she managed to get these really fantastic beds, and all the way she bought them in Cape Town, and then she got them shipped over to Central Africa, and now these dogs have really very good beds, because I didn't realize this. Maybe I should have done, but it's not good for dogs to be sleeping directly on concrete at all. They should be on like a proper bed. So, you know, sometimes our travelers will go away and be like, okay, I'm really passionate about what I've been introduced to, and as a result, I'm going to do some fundraising or do something to support this organization.
I had muted myself. Just 1 minute. Sorry about that. That sounds so interesting and so important. And one of the people I've interviewed in the series, she runs an exotic animal shelter in Japan.
And
during COVID, or she found that in the beginning of COVID, a lot of these exotic pet cafes were going under because everybody was staying at home. So what happens to all the animals? She found out that a lot of the animals were being destroyed. And so she opened up her home and then started collecting and saying, I will take any exotic animals. And she's created this big shelter full of amazing creatures who have been brought to Japan for entertainment and then discarded. And she just has the biggest, kindest heart, and she wants to help take care of them. And it's just a beautiful story.
That's amazing. That's something I've always wondered about in the pet cat, the animal cafes that are prevalent in Japan and other places. You know, what happens when those animals get sick? Do they get good quality veterinary care that can be very expensive? I don't know, but it's always a little suspicion that I have when I see them. Oh, dear.
So this is her website, Animo.
Animo, I'm going to have to write that down. That's so cool.
And even if you maybe just get her to come and talk when you're around the Tokyo area at one of your meals, and she could talk about the work that she's doing. And I know part of your tours is, of course, funding these organizations which are helping animals, which are working on conservation. So that's an added benefit of doing one of your tours. You are also actively supporting these great organizations, right?
Yes, we always include a big chunky donation to any of the places that we go to. Sometimes our travelers like to donate a little bit more, but they don't need to. But yes, we always include a good donation for these organizations. And that's something that we also try to do with our trips as well, is they're all inclusive trips. So the idea is that our travelers shouldn't have to think about money and think about tips and having the right notes to pay something. All of that's included so that you just don't have to worry about that at all.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Now, we were talking about unexpected kind of problems you might have as a vegan vegetarian traveler. One of the things, I do the Japan Travel Awards, and one of the hotels, which is very inclusive and won like a wonderful award for how inclusive they are, they included vegan vegetarian travelers as part of their inclusion motivation, right? And in their menu, they were so specific about using certain dyes for the different colorings of the food and how they're careful not to use ones even from insects or animals, of course. And I had never even thought about this from such a deep level. And I was so impressed with how much research they had done. For your trips, are you also doing that serious level of research for all the meals?
That's a great question. Yes, we would definitely be wanting to avoid things like carmine or the insect, that red colouring, cochineal, as it's sometimes called. We would definitely be wanting to avoid that. We want to make sure that the food and the drinks are vegan. We do kind of draw a bit of a line with like the filtration of like wines and beers and things like that, given that for listeners they might not know, but some alcohols use egg whites or isinglass.
Yes, that's made out of fish bladders. When I found out that Asahi beer in Japan is still using this, it's like fish scale
isinglass,
kind of traditional kind of filter. And for their beer. And so if you search vegan beers Japan, you can find the vegan ones. But that really threw me. Like, even using something like that, these are things you just don't know, right? Usually.
No, that's right. And, you know, I will say that we, for these kinds of sort of like, sort of very gray areas, and often you won't know whether, because it's not labeled. This is an interesting thing. It's not labeled, so it can be very hard to know whether it's officially vegan or not. I mean, if we were going to get really, really pernickety about it, we wouldn't even drink water, because water from our tap, because water uses bone char in the purification process, I believe. So I guess what our approach is, you know, our food is vegan. If you aspire to this extremely high level of purity, then good luck. But I think we're not going to be really a good fit for you.
Do you find that most of your travelers are probably just happy if it doesn't have meat or fish or dairy?
Yes,
and
yes.
It's healthy and it's tasty and it's satisfying. I imagine for most of your guests, that would be more than enough, right?
Exactly. I mean, we always try to find the vegan options when there are those available. You know, for example, we go to Botswana and we stay in these amazing camps, and they happen to have a sommelier there who buys all of the wines, and he actually goes and asks the questions about whether they're vegan wines or not. But, you know, somebody chooses to have a glass of wine over dinner in the countryside in France, then, you know, that probably hasn't been checked. But, you know, overall, like, everything is I think will align with most vegans' values.
Yeah, for sure. And above and beyond what you can normally find on your own, I think.
Yes, yes.
The number four was a complete holiday. So that idea that it's not just the travel plan, it's not just the local guides, it's not just the meals, it's also adding experiences which are in line with their values, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. And it also really touches on this idea of feeling like traveling is relaxing. As I mentioned, you know, traveling, especially if you're doing a land-based trip where you're going from one place to another and you've never been there before, it can be quite exhausting and it can feel like work. So hopefully what Seb and I can do and the guides and our partners, etc., we actually make it feel like a holiday, almost as sort of relaxing as those 2 weeks in a resort in Cabo, hopefully.
The basic parts of your tours from your website here, all meals and drinks included. You get a gift bag. Yes. One free laundry day. I love that. Yes. Two tour leaders, local guides, and all tips are included. So you don't even have to worry about the tipping. No. Can you add a little bit more about the gift bags or laundry day?
Sure. This is Seb's. The laundry day is Seb's thing, and I think he's right. You know, finding somewhere to do laundry can be a real pain, and it can often be a case of, you know, finding a laundromat, etc. Or you can get the hotel to do it, but then that can be extremely expensive. And it can, you know, you've got to figure out how it works. Well, if I put it in by, like, I've got to make sure I put it in by 7 o'clock if I want to get it back by that evening. Otherwise, I will have left by the time it arrives the next morning. You know, there's this kind of like, oh.
It takes some planning strategy, for sure. Yeah,
it is. So we include a laundry day. Sometimes it will be spread out over the trip, but usually we give people a laundry bag and we say, okay. And also we've often negotiated with the hotel, you know, a cheaper price. And of course it's included, so our travelers don't need to worry about that. Or we'll, like, for example, in Japan, we get it done in Hiroshima. And we basically, it's quite an operation. We get everybody, when they get off the train from the Shinkansen, they've got their bags of laundry in their bags ready to go. They put their bags onto the trolley. Then someone, our local guide or one of our assistants or something, they put those in a taxi. They go to the laundromat and then put it all in, and then they get it back the following evening or early the following day. So it gets all done in one fell swoop.
That's so interesting.
Yeah.
Actually, for my tour on Miyajima, I've added, there is an interesting coin laundry and they use a kind of bamboo-based detergent. So it's all very natural, can go back to nature. And so it's sometimes really interesting to be doing the laundry. But of course, it's something, especially when I was traveling with kids. It's something right. when oh, you yeah. travel, oh, God, and it's hot and you're going through all these clothes, you have got to have a chance to wash some yeah. clothes. So yes. I love that you've added that service. I think that's fabulous.
yes. And in terms of the tips, I mean, it's very interesting because I know tipping isn't a huge thing in Japan, but it's very much in the cultural psyche of North Americans, for example, to tip, whether it's meals or whether it's for guides or anything like that. But there's still a lot of tension with that. You know, it's all like, okay, how much should I tip them? Gosh, do I have the right note so that I don't have to ask for change or something like that? And it can cause a lot of anxiety. So, you know, we always just tell our travelers, you've already tipped. It's a good tip. You can just feel good about it and you don't need to tip at all. You shouldn't even really need to open your wallet the whole time that you're on this tour, unless, of course, you like to do shopping.
That's awesome. Yeah, if you want like a really expensive drink or a really expensive dessert or something, of course that would be extra, it sounds like.
Yes. Or top, of course top shelf alcohol is usually not included, but
in Japan, even that most amazing sake is really reasonable, right? Like, right, you can usually drink and eat really well at a reasonable rate, I imagine, in Japan and maybe other places on your tours as well.
Yep. I mean, we always try to make the dining experience, you know, the best that it could possibly be, because our tours are not cheap at all. So we certainly are not going to like have like ramen 3 days in a row, which is just like $6 or whatever it is. So we'll try to really make a wide variety of dining experience from the ramen to, you know, kaiseki, maiko dining experience.
That's so lovely, and definitely something people would really enjoy and find difficult hunting down for themselves, I imagine. One of the other things there was the bags, the gift bag. Tell us, is that a secret or
not at all? Actually, can I show you right now? Yes, I think I can.
Yeah,
so we always try to include some sort of useful and thoughtful sort of souvenir. So usually that's one part of it will be a tote bag. And I just have to reach around here. So for example, I have my Japan ones in the next room. So I'd have to leave the room in order to show it to you, even though they're really, really cool. Maybe I should. And so for example, on our Alsace trip at Christmas time, where we go to all of these Christmas markets. Sorry, I'm just pulling out the pens because it's my pen tidy. I don't know whether you are aware of this, but you go and have mulled wine in these Christmas markets. So we got these the custom art made for an enamel mug with all of the aspects of the trip. So here you've got like the bear sanctuary, you've got Paris right here, you've got Colleen and David with their little kitty cats, you've got Strasbourg, you've got Chateau Haupt Königsberg. So the idea is that, you know, you'll have a lovely reminder of your trip even far into the future. And Japan, which may be our best one, we have a bento box and a furushiki with all of the itinerary of the trip. And I was so surprised, one of our travelers actually got that framed, which I couldn't believe. And there's the tote bag as well, that's all been specifically designed for the trip, and you know, a few other little bits and pieces. So yes, that's the gift bag.
Oh, that's gorgeous. And so unique and personalized just for the memories of the tour, which sounds like a great idea.
Yes. So when we go to Botswana, for example, we have a coffee travel mug, a Contigo travel mug, because you're getting up so early in the morning and like piling into jeeps and everyone's tired, and then they can have like a nice coffee on the road with their insulated mug, again with that lovely art on it.
And then once again, there's that continuity with luxury travel and more sustainable travel, and I always feel like there is a direct connection there, and it sounds like a lot of your tours, you're giving them these beautiful high quality reusable things, which reduce waste, but also elevate the experience, right?
We hope so. I mean, and travel by its nature, especially long haul travel, is, you know, not great for the environment, far from it. But in our own small ways, we try to make sure that we are reducing single plastic waste and, you know, supporting organizations where we go, and, you know, these small little things. But I mean, you know, there is the elephant in the room. You know, travel is not especially green or sustainable. I think 1 in 10% of the world's economy is to do with travel. So, and a lot of people depend on it. So, So it would be very easy to say, well, just don't travel. And it's like, well, you know, it gives our lives meaning. It's fun. It helps with cultural understanding. And I think those are some real benefits that shouldn't be dismissed. And, you know, a lot of people economically depend on travel, for one, but also all of the staff that work in hotels, all of the guides, etc. So while I wish that there was some better alternatives for long haul flights, etc., and hopefully we'll get there. That's my stance. I don't want to sort of like greenwash and say, oh yeah, no. Yeah, our travel is so sustainable at all.
But you are doing it better because you're focused on plant-based foods, which we know has much less impact on the environment. You're also promoting conservation where you go, supporting local organizations which are doing good locally. And there's that idea of the international relations, the empathy for these various people at destinations, which we know has an effect for if later there's a disaster and people have been there, they're much more likely to be interested in supporting financially or as a volunteer. So there are so many positive, very sustainable, connected connections of travel that we don't want to get rid of it completely, but we do want to travel better. And I really feel what you're doing with World Vegan Travel is definitely the better path for more sustainable travel. So really appreciate all that you're doing.
Thank you, JJ. I appreciate that. That's very sweet of you to say.
Now, one thing in that great New York Times article, I'll put the gift link below if people want to read it. It's from 2022, but there's so many wonderful insights there. Of course, you guys are quoted as well for doing your vegan safaris, doing your like vegan focused things that you wouldn't expect that kind of travel would be possible. But also there was a thing about the disappointing airline travel that surprisingly it's been the airlines which appear to be the slowest on this uptick in veganism, many offering only bland food, limited offers for vegans. And I just flew on, I'm going to have to name you guys, Hawaiian Air and JAL, and I would say just ridiculously bad, like bland, tasteless. And compared to what everybody else is getting, you have like half the volume. You don't feel satisfied. There's very little plant-based protein, right? Mm-hmm. So really, come on, guys. You know, we must have at least 5% of international air travelers asking for vegan food. Have you found that as well? It's a real challenge with airlines?
Yes, definitely. It's got to the point where I just don't feel that we can trust the what the meal will be at all. And in some case, they'll even forget to load it. So for listeners who don't know, when you book your flight, you can often request, whether it's during booking or at least 48 hours before, you can request VGML. There are a couple of other codes that are similar, like there's a Jane one that seems to be vegan as well, even though usually with Jane, they eat dairy products. But you can always request it. So unless, like that's happened to us a couple of times, there'll be something, but it probably will not be that great. I've had flight attendants state that they're embarrassed to give me my food because it's so bad. And again, that's something that I always say, where are the beans? Where are the lentils? Where's the protein here? It's just terrible. And you know, there are some exceptions, but they're never reliable. There'll be like Emirates, for example, they'll do this big like marketing campaign and they're going to do all of these amazing new like impossible burgers on Air New Zealand if you're traveling business class. But, you know, there's usually some exceptions to the rule, like it's only if you're traveling out of Auckland, and it's just dizzying. So to keep up with it, and it would just be lovely if, of course, if they did good quality food. But if you're a new vegan,
you've probably found this too, but sometimes when I fly with European airlines, like KLM seems especially good. And even if you forget, which I have forgotten to even order, and then you ask the flight attendant, you're like, I'm so sorry, I've totally forgotten. I don't suppose you just have like a salad or a piece of bread. And she's like, no, we have some spare. Would you like a vegan meal or vegetarian? And I'm like blown away, right?
Yes. And so there's not the consistency. Right? So you just, you know, if you're a new vegan, then definitely take some snacks with you so that you're not so disappointed. I think as a vegan for a long time, I've come to expect it now. So I'll just pack something that will be interesting. You know, you could always pack like a ramen or that's not particularly healthy if that's something that's important to you, or like those dehydrated camping meals even that you, because of course, you know, you've got to be able to get it on the plane in the first place. So that can be a really great option as well, or a sandwich or something like that. Get with the program, airlines.
Like
come on.
No-brainer, right? It just seems like a no-brainer for the airlines to get on board, right? Especially everybody's traveling around the world. Now, in comparison to airline food, which is so disappointing, I do want to introduce this amazing new place we have in Hiroshima now, which has all vegan menu. And the desserts are absolutely amazing, as well as all the dinner and lunch foods. And that's right near Peace Park, Soge Sayu. It actually means up, down, left, right. So all inclusive. It's just very fashionable, very high level. And we're so excited to have it here in Hiroshima. So
that is exciting. Oh, my goodness. I need to know about that for next year's trips. My goodness. Because you helped us so much last trip, because we have two dinners in Hiroshima on our trip. One of them is great. Jiro's Kitchen, which I know that you were instrumental in helping him have a vegan menu. And then there was another
local okonomiyaki, right? That was a vegan version is sometimes hard to find. That's wonderful that you go there.
Yes. And then we had gone to another place in 2024, but unfortunately they didn't want to take groups for 2025. And you advised us of an alternative, and it was so much fun.
So glad. Her Chinese food, it's all vegan, vegetarian, and she has so much variety. Yeah. It's such a great resource in Hiroshima now.
It's fantastic. And I'm very curious about that place and the fact that it's just opened. Oh, my goodness.
Yes. And this is an issue, right, that I saw on your website about that some of the places you eat are not going to be entirely vegan. They're going to be, you know, have meat and fish as well as have vegan offerings. Do you find that your travelers, are they put off by that, or they're accepting of that?
Yeah, I mean, we couldn't eat at all vegan or vegetarian restaurants because, frankly, there are not that many available, not that many around, depending on where you go. And there could be a really amazing attraction and reason to go to a place, and you can't then travel 1 hour for lunch and then come back. So you have to, because otherwise you would be spending all day in the car. I mean, traveling an hour for lunch is just not great. So sometimes we'll have like a picnic lunch or a packed lunch or something like that, or a bento box on the train. But we always do try to, when we're eating in non-vegan places, we'll try to, just for our travelers' comfort, we'll just try to maybe book a private room in the restaurant, or we'll try to be in a certain area of the restaurant so that, you know, then they're less likely to, you know, smell whatever it is, or to have the wait staff walking past with all of the other meals. So it's obviously we can't eliminate it completely, but our travelers don't seem to mind as long as the food is good and that it's vegan.
Yeah, I'm sure there's a lot of logistical things which are really tricky. That's a really good point, right? You don't want to be walking around one area and then have to travel an hour just to eat somewhere. So you but you will if that's the only option, right? So you really want to have, especially at popular sightseeing places or around the experiences that you want to do, you definitely, in Japan, we want to have at least one or two good vegan options every popular travel destination. That would be a wonderful aim.
We'll get there. We'll get there, JJ.
We'll get there. That's good. That's very optimistic. So we have about six minutes left. Where do you envision the future for world vegan travel? I love this part of New York Times where you're talking about let's move beyond just French fries and green salads. Like we want to be the vegan travel option for all-inclusive luxury tours. Is that kind of what you see as your future vision?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I said that a very long time ago, so I think it's still true. I mean, it's very interesting because there are so many amazing places in the world, and it would be lovely if we could run vegan tours to all of those places, but obviously it's not very sustainable or doable, especially as Seb and I run all of the trips. You know, maybe we might consider expanding and getting other people to run our tours for us, but for now we quite like doing it this way. I think we couldn't do more than like 11 or 12 trips a year. That would be, I think we would burn out any more than that. So I guess we're at that because now we're doing 9 and we're selling out all of our trips way in advance, which is, you know, a lovely problem to have. So I guess a conversation we're going to have, hopefully we get to have, I should say, at some point in the next couple of years. And it's like, okay, what do we want to do? Do we want to scale with all of the benefits and challenges that could bring? Or are we quite happy as we are and just want to really focus on those 10 or 12 trips a year and run them and do them really, really well? Obviously, when we run the trips, we can control things. I guess that's where we are in our business and what we see the next few years as being.
That's lovely. And I'm sure you get repeat visitors, right? Repeat guests. So that would be the incentive to keep creating new tours, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. We have one of our travelers today. What was she on? Our French countryside trip. She had just done her 7th trip with us. So she's keeping us on our toes. We've got to make sure that we are providing new experiences for her. Otherwise, she might decide to go somewhere else.
That's so good. Well, we're so excited that you choose Japan as one of your vegan world travel destinations. And so proud that you choose Hiroshima. So we're very happy and pleased that you're coming through. I think you're having a very positive effect on the restaurants. Who knows? We may not have gotten this stylish new vegan place if it wasn't for you also helping with the groundwork as well as the work that we're doing with Get Hiroshima. So
if we played even the teeniest part, then that would make me really happy.
I'd like to finish with some of your mission statement or your company values, talking about integrity, teamwork, and caring. Your mission to give vegan and vegetarian, vegan curious travelers inspiration, information, and luxury travel, as well as a chance to make wonderful lifetime friends, to make great connections with other travelers who are like-minded and make great connections around the world with like-minded travelers and hosts and guides and destinations. I think that's wonderful.
Thank you. Yep, that's a big part of what we do. Thank you so much.
That's fantastic. Well, thank you so much for joining. It was
thank you, JJ. What a generous host you are. I really enjoyed this, and thank you so much for giving me this opportunity to chat on your wonderful talk show.
Oh, it's a pleasure. And likewise, thank you for having me on your podcast. So if anybody wants to listen to great podcasts about travel, which are focused on plant-based travel, definitely give World Vegan Travel Podcast a listen as well. Thanks so much for joining. And of course, even if you're watching a replay, you can add your comments and questions, and Bridie and I will definitely try and answer them anytime.
Thank you. Thanks again, JJ.
Yeah, thanks so much for joining. Thanks, everyone. See you next time. Take care.